अश्रम पुनस्तम गुरुरक्तचक्रमे
purport, the great Narada scene, the previous chapter of three verses in the sacrificial arena of the Pachetas, gave another impetus to Vidura to ask further questions. Vidura continued, I know that the great sage Narada is the greatest of all devotees. He has compiled the Pancharatrika, procedure of devotional service, and has directly met the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Therefore, there are two different ways of approaching the Supreme Lord. One is called Bhagavata Marga, or the way of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other is called Pancharatrika Vidhi. Pancharatrika Vidhi is the method of temple worship, and Bhagavata Vidhi is the system of nine processes which people with hearing and chanting. Krishna conscious movement accepts both processes simultaneously, and thus enables one to make steady progress in the path of realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Pancharatrika procedure was first introduced by the great sage Narada and is referred to here by Vidura. While all the Pachetas were executing religious rituals and sacrificial ceremonies and thus worshipping the Supreme Personality of God for satisfaction, the great sage Narada described the transcendental qualities of Dhruva Maharaj. Purport Narada Muni is always glorifying the pastimes of the Lord. In this verse, we see that not only does he glorify the Lord, but he also likes to glorify the devotees of the Lord. The great sage Narada's mission is to broadcast the devotional service of the Lord. For this purpose, he has compiled the Narada Pancharatra, a directory of devotional service, so that devotees can always take information about how to execute devotional service and thus engage 24 hours a day in performing sacrifices for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has created four orders of social life, namely Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. In the Narada Pancharatra, it is very clearly described how each of the social orders can please the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Sesve Karmani Avirata Samsidir Lavate Naram. By executing one's prescribed duties, one can please the Supreme Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also stated, Snushtasidharmasya Samsidir Haritoshanam. The perfection of duty is to see that by discharging one's specific duties, one satisfies the Supreme Personality of God. When the Pachetas were performing sacrifices according to this direction, Narada Muni was satisfied to see these activities. And he also wanted to glorify Dhruva Maharaj in that sacrificial arena. My dear Brahmana, how did Narada Muni glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And what pastimes were described in that meeting? I am very eager to hear of them. Kindly explain fully about the glorification of the Lord. Purport Srimad Bhagavatam is a record of Bhagavad Katha, topics about the pastimes of the Lord. What Vidura was anxious to hear from Mathura, we can also hear 5,000 years later, provided we are very eager. The great sage Maitreya replied, my dear Vidura, when Maharaj Dhruva departed for the forest, his son Utkala did not desire to accept the opulent throne of his father, which was meant for the ruler of all the lands of this planet. From his very birth, Utkala was very satisfied and unattached to the world. He was equipoised, for he could see everything resting on the Supersoul and the Supersoul present in everyone's heart. Purport, the symptoms and characteristics of Utkala, the son of Maharaj Dhruva, those of the Mahabhagavata, described in Bhagavad Gita, Yomam Pasati Sarvatra Sarvam Chatmai Pasati. A highly advanced devotee sees the Supreme Personality of God everywhere, and he also sees everything resting in the Supreme. It's also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Tatamidam Sarvam Jagadavyaktamurtinana. Lord Krishna is spread all over the universe in his impersonal feature. Everything is resting on him. But that does not mean that everything is he himself. Highly advanced Mahabhagavata devotee sees in this spirit. He sees the same Supersoul Paramatma existing within everyone's heart, regardless of discrimination based on the different material forms of the entities. He sees everyone as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Mahabhagavata, who experiences the Supreme Godhead's presence everywhere, is never missing from the sight of the Supreme Lord. Nor is the Supreme Lord ever lost from his sight. This is possible only when one is advanced in the love of Godhead. After hearing Maitreya Rishi describe Dhruva Maharaj as sent to the Lord Vishnu's abode, Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion and inquired from Maitreya as follows. So, this chapter actually is genealogy, which means descendants. This will often come up, especially in the 8th canto, 9th canto. Most of the texts are simply a list of people, that's all. So not much to describe there other than that so many descendants arose from different lines of kings, many of them originating from the Manus. We see that Dhruva arose from Swayambhuva Manu's lineage. And then he has children also. And they have children. And throughout Swayambhuva Manvantara, which lasts 71 yuga cycles, those descendants will continue to rule the Varsha and other Varshas on Mumandala. Which is one of the topics of a Purana, to describe the different lineages of kings and to describe the Manvantaras. So we're still on the first Manvantara in the 4th canto, and then of course after that other Manvantaras are also described and the different Manus. So this all takes place within Swayambhuva's reign, which is the first part of the day of Brahma. And this is a repetitive cycle. Every day of Brahma has a series of 14 Manus, and they have their kings descending this way. So this will take place all the way until the 9th canto. At the end of the 9th canto, finally, the description of genealogy stops with the appearance of Krishna. And then the 10th canto goes on to describe the activities of Krishna. So then, of course, and later in the 12th canto, again, the last genealogies are described also in Kali Yuga. So, anyway, this chapter will describe all about the genealogies or the history of the different kings. Not much is said about individual kings, but more just about the line of kings. At the beginning here, Suta Goswami speaks and describes conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. So the Bhagavatam, as we have it, is a discussion between spoken by Suta Goswami to the sages in Anisaranya. And within that, then various people speak. So the first part of the Bhagavatam is a discussion between, of course, we have Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami discussing. But then we also have these discussions within that. So Sukadeva describes the different persons speaking. So one of them in the third canto, for instance, and we'll find a discussion that starts between Vidura and Maitreya, and that continues in the fourth canto. So in this way we find discussions within discussions. So Vidura is asking questions and Maitreya is answering. So Maitreya, of course, is a great sage, disciple of Vedavyas, and Vidura is asking him particularly these different questions. So here he's asking about the descendants of Dhruva, because it was described in the previous chapter that Dhruva left the kingdom at a certain point in time. So he must have left some descendants behind, because he was reigning for 36,000 years. So then now the story begins of his descendants. So he had a son here who was called Utkala. But Utkala actually was not very interested in maintaining the kingdom, because he was more interested in spiritual things. So that created a problem for the kingdom. So this last verse, verse 7, describes how, why he was so disinterested. Because he was Samadarshana. He saw everything equally. He was not interested in seeing demons or punishing criminals, etc. He was completely detached from the material world, and he saw Paramatma and everything. So he wasn't interested in ruling the kingdom. So this idea of being Samadarshana is often raised up. in relation to others also, like Dhruva and others. So that's a quality of a person detached from the world. It is not the ultimate quality for the devotee, this could be samadarshana. For the devotee, the greatest quality is to see Bhagavan everywhere, not Paramatma. So, vision of the Supreme Lord as Bhagavan is predominant in the mind of the devotee. Paramatma is predominant in the mind of the yogis. Nevertheless, there is a similar type of attitude because of seeing the Lord either as Paramatma or as Bhagavan in all things, which creates a detachment from the material world. Of course, we'll see in the 11th canto, there is a description of the Mahabhagavata or the Uttamanikari, and there again, a type of description is there like this, where the great devotee only sees everything in the Lord, etc. So what that means is, not that he simply reverts back to a lower vision like that of the yogi, but rather because of his immersion in prema for the Lord, he sees everything in relation to the Lord, as Bhagavan, not simply as the pervaded Paramatma. So there is some difference there. So the motivation is his vision of the Supreme Lord as the object of love, whereas the Paramatma Yogi does not see love so much, he simply sees the power of the Lord spread everywhere. So the Uttamadikaris have also a vision of oneness, everything in the Lord, and the Lord in everything, but it is somewhat different from that of the yogis. And so we should remember that when we hear these descriptions. We'll see also in the description in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, the devotee also has this, sees like this, samadarshan, etc. However, ultimately, the reason is a little different. Realization of the devotee is not Paramatma, but Bhagavan. And that Bhagavan realization comes about because of prema, and everything else is filled with prema. The realization of the yogi is Paramatma. He does not have prema. So he sees that form of Paramatma everywhere. He realizes that, but he does not have a conception of Bhagavan or that same prema. So the vision of the great devotees is one of prema. So Dhruva also had prema. He was completely dedicated to the Supreme Lord, yet he ruled the kingdom, where Utka didn't want to rule at all. He was very disinclined and became very detached from it. But actually there's no difference, because Dhruva also was disinterested. He was not attached to the kingdom at all, and he gave it up very quickly when he could. After 36,000 years, he had no trouble renouncing that kingdom. So he was also very detached from everything. The only reason he did it was because the Lord ordered him to do it. So that was part of his devotional service, to carry out that particular duty. So he did that on behalf of the Lord. But otherwise he was also detached from all the activities. And we will see other examples also. It's described later that Ambarish, he was completely dedicated to the Supreme Lord. He was also the king of the whole world. So he was not interested in the kingdom at all, but he ruled it because that was his duty. So it's described that he was completely occupied serving the Lord. So it's described that he would engage all of his senses in serving the Lord, cleaning the temple and seeing the Lord, and worshiping the Lord, and hearing about the Lord. In this way, he engaged all of his senses at all times. Yet, he engaged others to rule the kingdom. That's how he did it. So he had them do all the different duties, and he absorbed himself in bhakti. So that is a good way in which the devotee who is a king can resolve the conflict between his devotion and the obligation to rule the world. So we'll find many, many kings listed here, most of whom will have quite a high level of bhakti. Not all are on the same level, however. Yeah? So some will be more involved with ruling, and some will be more detached from ruling and more involved in bhakti. Yeah, but in any case, they are at least recognizing the Supreme Lord and following the tenets of Dharma, etc., under His order. So that should be remembered also. So here we have disinterest. And we'll find this later with the Prachetas also. They were disinterested. They did not want to rule. In fact, they avoided it for some time until they were ordered to take up the kingdom. So this often may happen because of the nature of those particular devotees. They would simply prefer to do full devotional service and not be bothered at all with the ruling of the kingdom. So according to individual nature, sometimes this tendency will be there. Others may prefer to do both things. And we'll see that in the case of the Pandavas. They ruled also, and they were great devotees, whatever. So it depends on the particular devotee.
Before you
argue
that, you were disinterested. You want to quit the kingdom
That was for a different reason. That was because he was put under Maya by the Supreme Lord at that particular time. Now, otherwise, the Pandavas were dedicated to getting the kingdom away from the Kauravas. And they had spent 13 years and banished and whatever, and like that. So that was a temporary situation for Arjuna.
Even the later things, like what is mentioned in this chapter, it's not the beginning of the responsibility of the responsibility of this day.
Well, we'll see that some do, and in the fifth canto again, Bharat's brothers, some of them became sages. They didn't become kings, even though they're born in the Kshatriya family. They became sages instead, so it depends on their nature also.
You know, it's said that the citizens will be just like a king, but then the citizens will be like a king, always like a king. But when you see that so many kings were renounced and detached, and they were ruling also, the citizens were not like them.
Well, that's a general proposition. We can't expect every citizen to follow, right? Because the king has to punish some people, obviously. But nevertheless, he sets a good example. So, Dhruva set a good example. He renounced at a certain time. And all the people in his kingdom also, they would be similar. We did that in general. In most cases, there are a few examples of undevotees like Bain, who was killed, and Prithu was born from his body. So it depends. Some of them, some of the kings were not. They were a few demons to get also, like King Vena. So that they killed him. So that line was technically broken, but then Prithu was generated from his body. So the line continued after that.
So the kings also are good at the great sages, at the sages, you know.
Hmm?
The kings also, they are also good at the sages.
Good?
But the sages people.
Yeah.
The sages.
Yeah.
They are also good at the sages, the kings.
Well, generally, yeah. But of course, they have a different function. The kings also have to rule the kings. The sages don't have to do that. The sages give advice. So they're engaged more in spiritual activity, and they don't have to rule the kingdom at all. So they just appear and give advice to the king.
What do we compare this discount? Like, they have this administration in the world. Sometimes it looks like we have the sage and the discount. We have this put up administration in the world. How do we do it both ways?
Well, it's more or less the same thing as Prabhupada quotes in the purport here, that the duty may be done, but then the goal is to satisfy the Supreme Lord, then it becomes perfect. So whatever duties are there, if the goal is satisfaction of the Lord, then it's okay. And if it's not, then it becomes purely material.
They may be more advanced than the sages.
Could be, in case, like, for instance, Pandavas are more advanced than any sage because they were just citizens. So it depends on the case.
निरन्तरस्य शिष्यवत् नारदन्ति जयन्ति जयन्ति भक्तिरतां शुभं भावति नूप्रतम्